Welcome everybody to episode 85 of High Tech on the Low. Liron, how are you this morning?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
I'm very glad to hear you. We are here with Liron from Team 8. And as always, we are sponsored by Front Team with 12 different communities, 6 verticals, and 3,000 members looking to connect. And as always, if you hear and like what you're listening to, please give us a follow, like, view, subscribe, anything like that. We're always down. And Liron, today we get a really cool opportunity with you, I think, to talk to you about the world of VCs, venture capital, and understand a little bit what's going on in that world right now, you know, especially with the, you know, looming economic recession, or are we already in one? No one really knows. And, you know, just understanding kind of too what the value that Team 8 also brings to the VC world, because, you know, you guys are definitely a name and people do know you guys, and it's cool to, you know, learn more about that. So I'm here with Liron. Please introduce yourself to the people at home so they know a little bit about you.
Thanks for having me again. My name is Liron Grinberg. I'm one of the three founders and a managing partner at Team 8, an Israeli-based venture capital group. 35 years old, partner to Oshir, who's an architect.
Okay.
I have a little brother who's a painter and a sculptor, so surrounded by very creative people while I do tech and
I was going to say, you got like the other genes, right? You know.
Exactly. And and we can definitely talk more about Team 8, but we build companies and invest in areas of expertise, including cyber, data infrastructure, fintech, and digital health. And me personally today in the firm, focusing on investments in cybersecurity and enterprise infrastructure.
Okay, very cool. So basically, you know, the world of VCs right now, obviously, very interesting, right? No one's going to throw anything out there that it's not an interesting time in the VC world. You know, from your perspective, you know, Liron Grinberg, you know, part of Team 8, I understand that, you know, this is not, we're not giving, you know, investment advice, we're not telling economic advice here. But, you know, from your perspective, what's the state of the market right now for the startup world?
So definitely, it's interesting times. We've seen in 2020 and 2021, an environment, a radical environment, if you'd like, where we've seen very high valuations, but also many other parameters like the speed of deals being made very fast. Like we were almost unable, the ones that wanted to be more disciplined and to do the right things, to do the right processes, to take time to do things and to value things at the right valuations, etc. It was very hard to play.
Okay. So the no shortcut route, basically, what you're saying. Okay.
Right. So and given the change in the macroeconomics, now it's a whole different environment.
Okay.
I will say everybody talks about that there's a lot of pessimistic predictions on where we're heading and whether it will take the next 6 months or maybe a year, maybe more. I'll try to give a more optimistic view of this,
okay,
if you'd like.
I feel like that's good for you, too, because, you know, a lot of VCs, they always say, you know, like the founder has to be optimistic. But you're an optimistic VC, so that's good.
To be a venture capitalist, you have to be a little bit optimistic.
Okay, awesome.
I'd say the following. The world has a lot of more problems to solve.
Okay.
Enterprises need to do a lot more in their digital transformation journeys.
Sure.
So there's no lack of need for new startup companies and new innovation to come.
Okay.
That's one thing. The other, I'd say, there's a lot of capital looking to get deployed.
Okay.
There's a lot of dry powders with various funds, both Israeli VCs as well as foreign VCs that are looking to make investments in Israel. A lot of it and a lot of capital.
Okay.
So nothing is stopping, if you'd like. The third thing I'd say is that the more you go early stage, and at Team 8, I think we go the earliest possible.
Okay.
We'll talk about Team 8 and the model. We sometimes even found new companies from scratch.
Sure. We'll get that into a minute, you know what I mean?
Of course. So the more you get early stage, the less the macroeconomics are relevant, or the less the multiples of the public markets are relevant. Because when you start a new company that hasn't have any revenue, multiples, there's nothing like multiplying with zero will always get you to the same result. Right.
Right.
And even when you took it, so definitely not at seed rounds, but A rounds, even B rounds, it's still pretty far enough from looking at multiples to what's happening in the public market to really be relevant. You do need to do things...
you're not in a vacuum. But
exactly.
You're still testing out the model.
Exactly. Sure. And things have changed. But again, in action, definitely in the more competitive areas, at least in the Israeli startup space, cybersecurity being one example.
Of course.
We're not seeing... a lot of change in seed rounds.
Okay.
One, I'd say...
Oh, they're pretty consistent even right now?
Pretty consistent. I'd say, first of all, very active.
Okay.
There's
like people are still investing.
Still investing. Okay. There's a lot of new deals taking place.
Sure.
The sizes of those rounds, let's say a typical cyber seed deal, anything between $5 to $8 million, that uh-huh. that remains. It hasn't changed.
Even throughout this kind of change of economic, everyone getting, you know, a little nervous, the, you know, the purses are tightening up, right? Correct. Everything's going.
You don't see $2 or $3 million seed rounds in cyber all of a sudden, okay. like a cutback or something of that sort.
Sure.
There were definitely exceptions of very high value deals mm-hmm. In 2020, 2021. Sure. The valuations you see more stay at the norm and what makes sense. But since the salaries haven't gone down,
right.
Everything is still expensive as it used to be.
Sure.
And in order to get to those milestones for the A round after a seed round, right. that hasn't changed. So you don't see those numbers go down.
Okay. So overall, it's kind of remained the same. But this is also kind of more so for like the cyber world, enterprise kind of solutions world. Do you see it? I mean, I know that that's your expertise and maybe you can't really speak to it. But have you seen also this change, you know, kind of remaining the same, you know, this consistency of at least seed rounds and stuff in other industries? Or is this pretty enterprise solutions, cyber specific?
Right. So I think generally, I think this is true generally in seed.
Mm-hmm.
There are some areas, for example, insurtech and stuff like that, that mm-hmm. maybe are got hit, and there's maybe a slowdown also mm-hmm. in new investments in the space. But generally, seed rounds remained similar,
mm-hmm.
Which means cyber deals were bigger right. At seed, and, right. and in other areas they were less so. So they remained the same.
Okay.
The changes do come to effect at the other areas. You know, in A rounds we've seen in the previous years, you know, A round stage companies with almost no revenue raising north of $100 million valuations or much more than that,
which is crazy.
That has stopped.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So you do see, you know, again, A rounds are happening at good valuations, but nothing that is too crazy. And then
and there are those corrections, like you're saying, kind of going on where no one's really doing these, you know, outlandish rounds, kind of, and getting these outlandish fundings at this outlandish valuation. It's kind of, things are going on, but, you know, there are certain corrections going
on. Okay. Everything is more disciplined, I'd say.
Okay.
The processes that VCs do, the founders may become a little bit more modest and not okay. expecting a term sheet in 2 days' time.
Sure.
And everything is more disciplined. You do start to see change from the rounds later on.
Okay.
And for investors that do more early growth and growth stage, there's some slowdown in their ability to deploy capital and to do deals because of the fact that some of the assets out there, some of the startups out there are overvalued and right. need to grow into their valuations.
Okay.
So it's that's
an interesting point. Have to grow into it, you mean?
Correct. Okay. Because they raised at a valuation that is not justified.
Okay.
And then it really depends on the case. Some companies are a little bit overvalued.
Okay.
And they have cash in the bank for, let's say, 2 years. So there's no rush for them to fundraise now
mm-hmm.
And no need, of course, to do a down round or something of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just be very disciplined in how they deploy the capital and create enough value to grow into their valuation. And hopefully in a year's time or so, they will raise again at an app round,
mm-hmm.
which is great. And this is why those companies will, again, would rather not fundraise in the foreseeable future.
Right.
And they have the ability to do so.
And kind of focus on the product, focus on the development to actually grow into that valuation.
Right.
Okay.
At the right metrics. By the way, that this is another interesting topic because the 2021 terms, of course, this is a cliche to say by now, but it was growth, 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 and
right.
valuation.
Right.
Now companies are looking much more at healthy unit economics
uh-huh.
and gross margins of the business and path to profitability.
Right.
The
unit economics being the huge one, especially for the VC world.
Correct. You know? And while previously I said that the seed round, there's almost no connection whatsoever to multiples
right.
at the public markets.
Right.
But the unit economics of a company or the fundamentals of how, at the end of the day, this company will become profitable
right.
and the gross margins will be good, this is something that actually you should think of from day one.
Right.
You should design for it. Like the company will be losing money for many years until it will be profitable, of course.
Right. Well, but, that's good business at a certain point.
But the unit economics right. and all of that, you know, whereas in the past, some investors completely neglected that part and lets us grow and show eyeballs or show whatever other metrics. This is now something you need to look at. You always should have, but
now it's 100%.
All the VCs will now look at all those metrics.
Okay.
Also things like the pace of burn, the burn rate versus the traction of the company.
Sure.
Looking at those metrics and make sure that they are reasonable for the next funding milestone of the company are things that that you definitely take care of more nowadays.
For sure. Are there any red flags right now? You know, especially considering kind of, we can say, you know, this kind of crunch time in the market. You know, are there red flags that you look at when you're evaluating a startup and you're like, oh, okay, you know, this doesn't add up?
I'd say that for me personally, it hasn't changed from what it was used to be before.
Okay.
At seed runs, and as I mentioned, there's not a lot of data to look at from that regard. There's no previous. Typically, when we seed, we're first money in. The company is just getting started.
Uh-huh.
But even if you look at the A round, for example, you need to see that the burn makes sense. That that value that they created with the seed funding that they had up until now shows like. Gives a good path that this team is executing.
Like you can feel good about them, right?
Right, they're executing very well.
Okay.
Because again, it's not a crazy traction of, some people said $1 million ARR for an A round. Many times we're doing A rounds with much less traction than that. But in a year and a half time where the team has been out there working with a few $1 million in the bank for seed funding, you do look at how they deployed the capital and how did they execute, and what traction did the company get at that stage?
Right.
So definitely, if any of these are not so positive, these are the gaps that we're looking at.
But that's like kind of your still main criteria. It was the same a year and a half ago, same as now. You know, doesn't
early stage land. You know, people.
Right.
The team, which we can spend an hour talking about. What do you look in the right team?
Right. That's for the next episode.
All right. a big market and a big problem that people will be willing to pay significantly for, and an approach that resonates with the market and that is highly validated. Right. So we're looking at all those things, and in each of them, like we zoom in. Thoroughly to create conviction in order to make an investment.
Sure. And I mean, I guess that's really what you have to do at the early stage too, specifically, because as you're saying, there's nothing to go off of, right? It's not like you're looking at past data or past work or past, you're looking at the team's past work. You're looking at, could they do this? Is this a good team? Is this, the right type of time to go into the market with that? So for sure.
Correct.
Now, a little bit about Team 8, you guys have a very unique model. Which I think honestly is very different than a lot of VCs out there, at least in my opinion, and I'm sure actually to a lot of industry leaders as well. And I'd love for you to just kind of like highlight, some of the things that you find to be very, like what's the teammate value proposition here when founders come and work with you guys?
So first I'd say we believe in domain expertise. And
focus. What do you mean when you say domain expertise? Because that's also kind of a wide term, you know what I mean?
It means that we're not generalist.
Okay.
In anything that we do, we build and invest in companies in areas that we really understand.
Mm-hmm.
So in every one of those domains, cybersecurity, data infrastructure, fintech and digital health, we have multiple partners that have founded companies in the space successfully, that has worked in those industries, that really have past experience in that specific industry or domain, if you'd like, as well as generally company building experience.
Okay.
So the partnership at Team 8 brings a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And we believe in focus. We believe in, if you have, if you've been, in the cyberspace involved with, dozens of companies in the space and have all this, it brings a lot of value to the next company that you're investing in, to the next founding team that embarks on a new journey.
Right.
We believe it's
extremely important,
right? That's one thing. The other is that we really believe that we're here to work for the founders we invest in.
Okay.
And we invest.
That's refreshing.
Yes, that's refreshing. And definitely not the other way around.
Yeah.
Like we do have our fiduciary rights and our governance to do. But,
of course, you're still VC firm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Exactly. But our day to day is how do we create the most impactful firm and platform team behind it to accelerate the success of the portfolio companies.
So how do you do that? Like, let's say, you know, what's like a real, you know, example of that? You know, let's say I'm a guy, I come to you, I have a cybersecurity, you know, startup, I want to get funded, you agree, we're funding, now what, you know?
So I'd say the following. Teammate is managing now about $1 billion and employs almost 90 people. 90 people, wow. I think, makes us one of the largest venture groups in Israel, headcount-wise.
Definitely.
And we're still, I'd say, the new kid in the block. We've been around only for the past eight years.
Teammate 8 years. Okay, great.
By chance.
What happens at nine? No.
A lot of those 90 people are focused on helping the company succeed after we make the investment.
Okay.
So one example is HR. Mm-hmm. We have a full-fledged team that focuses both on helping portfolio companies hire R&D and product talent here in Israel, mm-hmm. as well as, and we have a team in the U.S. For that, mm-hmm. to hire executives in the U.S.
Okay.
Both of these areas are extremely challenges. Even if, you know, the founding teams are, a lot of time, are have the ability to attract amazing product and R&D talent, sure. to follow them and join them, for sure. Yeah. And still, it's extremely hard and competitive.
Sure.
And hiring those first 10 and then 20 employees for the companies, mm-hmm. which a lot of it focuses on R&D and product at that stage.
Right.
If you build a AAA team, AAAs bring AAA, and it's becoming a AAA organization generally, and definitely an amazing product and engineering organization. Mm-hmm. So we invest a lot of resources and a whole team helping our companies do that incredibly well.
Okay.
And thereafter hire those executives in the U.S.
Okay. When they're trying to go, you know, like market expansion.
Right. VP of marketing, VP of sales, etc. Sure. These are typically hires that the companies do in the U.S.
Okay.
So HR is one example. The other that's very dominant is go-to-market.
Okay, yeah. I would imagine. Obviously, one of the most important, especially for the early stage guys, right?
Correct. And we're building companies that a lot of the times the starting point is out of Israel, where the market we're targeting is the U.S. market.
Right, or Europe, or yeah, one of the bigger markets, sure, for 100%.
Right, and then you were far from the market, right. And go-to-market is critical in these regards.
How do you help them, though? Is it more through market research, or is it through localization efforts, or what is it for? Right.
So actually, before doing the investment work that I do now,
right.
It's part of Teammate Capital, a VC fund, I led this practice of go-to-market, which started with just myself, but then we started bringing on board marketing, and then business development,
sure.
and then business research and strategy. And nowadays, we have a whole big group that has a team of marketing, a team of business development, and a team of business research and strategy.
Okay.
And before diving into it, I'd say generally it splits to two. One aspect is real hands-on capabilities,
okay.
and full-time employees,
sure.
that just help the companies achieve their goals in all of these regards.
Okay.
And the other aspect is helping the companies more strategically building their own go-to-market machines. Because at the end of the day, we will be very helpful and accelerate their path to revenue and to customers and to strategic partnerships and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, the company is independent and it needs to build its own marketing machine and sales machines and all of that. So this will be around helping them make the right hires. Here we go to that point again. But just generally strategize around it and bring all the right consulting and advisory to have them do the do new mistakes, but not mistakes that people have done in the past that you can avoid.
Well, it sounds like a balancing act a little bit, because you both want to like help them on one end, right? Get the material and the resources and the understanding of what they're going to do and how to do it. And then on the other hand, it's saying like, but you guys now have to do it, right? You know, we're going to give you the support, but we're not there for you, you know?
I'd say let's look at kind of like business development.
Okay.
When Teammate started 8 years ago, the focus was solely cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at that. Okay. It's probably the strongest practice in the business development efforts, because it's been 8 or 9 years that we're in the making.
Okay.
We've created this very, very, very powerful CISO community.
Okay.
That we call the Teammate Village, or the CISO Village for this specific one. CISOs are the Chief Information Security Officers, the one buying cybersecurity product at enterprises.
Right.
This community has about 400 CISOs today.
Okay. And they're all over the world, basically?
All over the world, with a big emphasis on the U.S. market.
Sure.
Because in this industry, typically you start with targeting the U.S. market.
Uh-huh.
And when you conquer the U.S. market, you can conquer the rest of the world.
Right.
So a lot of the majority comes from that market. And we host two summits a year, one in New York for 2 days. We just came back from New York, and then one of 5 days in Tel Aviv,
okay,
where we host the CISOs, 150 CISOs in these two summits approximately, morning till night.
Okay.
And we spend time with them thinking about the future of the industry, talking about their challenges that are not currently having solutions to solve them.
Nice.
We talk to them about their career paths. We talk to them about how they build their own organizations. We're considered for those CISOs like trusted advisors and facilitator of a community that helps them succeed.
Sure.
Parts of it is introducing them to innovations and to startups and vendors, but we're there for them much more than that.
That's interesting. That's very different than most VCs. You know, you guys are actually going out there to like kind of your constituency, your customer base, and saying, hey, how can we help you? And then on top of that, connecting them to the innovation. It's not like a pure innovation. It's not like a pure deal making, you know, flow type of situation.
Exactly.
Which I love.
They don't see Teammate as a pure VC, right? We're much more than that for them. And just to name a few examples, and then I'll say the impact. When a SolarWinds breach happens, like a major breach in the industry, we'll send out a virtual CISO huddle Zoom session in like a 24-hour notice.
So can everyone come on the Zoom and talk, basically?
And 170 CISOs connect to that Zoom, and we have an incident response company, so we've been researching that area for a few days now.
Sure.
And we have our own technology research team at Teammate that has looked at this account, and we share everything that the world knows about this by now. And then the CISOs just proactively volunteer to share their best practices and what, you know, the global CISO of Walmart has done or the global CISO at Citigroup has done. And that's extremely valuable to them. And again, we haven't sold any product to them.
Right. It's just value creation. It's just, you know.
For the CISOs, I'm not even talking about founders right now, right?
Right.
So we're talking about how we create value for CISOs. Another example, and then I'll talk about the impact, is when Joe Sullivan, who was the CISO at Uber, he was recently accused in court in the U.S. Because of not disclosing a data breach with personal user information.
Problematic, for sure, as a CISO.
For sure. Yeah. And Joe Sullivan will most probably go to jail.
Okay.
He was accused in court. The exact punishment is not finalized yet, but he will probably go to jail.
Okay.
And that was for the CISO community. That was a shocking kind of like all of a sudden you need to think of your legal risks and liabilities, right?
And your whole career, your life, everything.
How do you?
Yeah.
So in
again, how do you even overcome that?
In 24 hours, we brought the CISO community together.
Okay.
We lined up all the legal experts in this topic in the U.S. and helped them understand how do they need to look at their legal risk, what conversations they need to drive with their general counsel at the enterprise they work for, what do they need to look at in their D&O insurance.
Mm.
And 10 days after that, with an initiative that our CISO in residence, Gadi, has led, we published a 20-page report on the legal risks guide for CISOs.
Wow.
And that's something, and this was curated by this CISO community and by them, but we facilitated it, right?
And
so we bring them.
Are you doing this around in many different industries? Like not just with CISOs. So you're doing it also in digital health. You're bringing over those guys. You're
correct.
Doing it
everywhere. The Teammate Village is now expanding to each of the areas that where we bring a lot of domain expertise so we can bring value.
Teammate Village.
We say that to solve big problems, it takes a village. And this is why we adopted this word. So this is now coming back to Startup Land and the founders.
Right. Let's go back to the founders.
So
okay.
All this strong community is helping Teammate, to know what are the areas to invest? What are the big problems? When we look at a specific problem or due diligencing and investing in a company, we can approach the CISOs and get their guidance. Is this really a painful problem? And does the idea here resonates in terms of the deployment makes sense? This is how it comes. So obviously very helpful for us. For the founders, obviously, it means that they have an open door for candid conversations, getting real honest feedback, which is
with
extremely important.
With many different industry leaders.
Correct.
Yeah.
And when you want to validate early on, you really want a critical mass of validation.
100%.
From a lot of CISOs, from different verticals, as you just mentioned, from different sizes of companies, sometimes from different geographies.
Right.
And we can provide them with that.
Wow.
And then let's get to the, you know, eventually driving revenue. So this community or this activity of Teammate on the business development front or with this village generates dozens of millions of dollars of ARR of revenue for the portfolio companies.
Well, it's amazing. You've created this like ecosystem, almost self-sustaining in certain ways, right? You build your community, you give it to the founders. Founders get value. They build it. They sell their products. And it's just like, you know, a great kind of circle here. Now, have you seen this type of model in other VCs?
So, you know, a lot of VCs talk about value adding now, sure. Really.
That's a big buzzword of the VC world.
Right. And in the past, I'd say a lot of it was either people didn't even talk about it or just talked about it and didn't deliver. I think the VC industry is changing. Mm-hmm. And it's becoming more of a founder's market than a VC market, right?
Okay.
So you see more funds figuring out what's their differentiation and what's their value. When we started thinking about Team8 9 or 10 years ago, this was more the exception than the norm.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're seeing more of it. I'd say in Team8's model, what we've done is one good comparison is actually Andreessen Horowitz,
okay,
in the U.S. market,
right,
where the general partners there, or I'd say at Team8, the general partners are just taking very modest salaries,
mm-hmm,
and we're not building homes out of the fees,
right,
of raising big funds. We'll make money when our LPs make money,
sure,
from carry when our companies are successful.
Sure.
And we invest all those fees in building this value-adding platform team. And this is what brought us to be 90 people,
mm-hmm,
and invest all of that resources in making sure that we are doing the right investment, but also making sure that the investment that we've done or the companies that we are helping build are succeeding in go-to-market, in HR, in all of those value-adding areas.
Right, like the way to actually build a company, right? You know, and that's what I think is very unique too, is that you're able to actually give them the tools, the resources, and whatever you want to call this large ecosystem, the village, which I really love, to kind of build that out for them and allow them to actually access this. Now,
I just want to maybe come back to just close the narrative earlier. So with value adding, for example, with the CISOs, so A, we're helping them just generate revenue and introduce them to dozens and hundreds of,
sure,
of potential customers and all of that. And in parallel to this, we also help the company just build their own sales machine,
mm-hmm,
right? Because at the end of the day, they'll need to build their own demand gen engine,
right,
and get to create pipeline of customers themselves.
Right.
So we're doing those two things in parallel, which is very important.
Right.
Same goes for marketing. We helping them be at the right...
you let them access everyone. I mean, it's amazing. And it's like the Team8 stamp of approval, right? You know, we are invested in this company. Talk to them, right? And then as a founder on my end, I know that this is the Team8 stamp of approval on this guy who I'm talking to even get value from him. I mean, I think it's a very unique method in that sense. Now, have you seen it work? You know, I'll say it. Have you seen it work both to good and to bad? Like, has it been kind of, you know, problematic for some companies who are getting like maybe overwhelmed with feedback? Or on the other end, is it, you know, just helping them grow, exponentially?
I'm trying to think. It's more so founders, typically it's more founders wanting more.
Yeah, okay.
Right? So right. some in their character are more aggressive than the others.
Sure,
makes sense. Will do a phenomenal job of extracting as much value as they can from the Team8 platform. And some will be more polite and will say thank you for everything they get, but not necessarily kind of like squeezed to
not
get more of us.
Yeah.
I didn't find any founder in our portfolio that said, enough with those CISOs introductions. We have too many on our plate. We don't want to meet new customers. I haven't heard that just yet.
Okay, well, that's good. You know, we're getting towards the end of the interview, and basically I always like to...
But we didn't even, we talked about the value-adding part of Team8. I didn't even mention the model that is unique about us.
So then,
also building companies, not just investing.
So we're getting towards the end, but
we cannot miss.
Well, that you're allowed to go into right now. And then I also really want you to focus this part of that is that more, I want to understand too, you know, what is your advice to for entrepreneurs who are getting into, you know, the funding space right now, maybe with an early idea, because how can they come to people like yourselves and really understand how best to present themselves? Because at the end of the day, that's what you're doing. That's what you're helping them with.
Right.
So go ahead, tell us about the model, and then I want you to answer that.
The topics relate.
Okay.
Building a startup company is difficult,
mm-hmm,
and you want to focus on where you have advantages and unfair advantages. So
okay,
we definitely like to back founders that are insiders to the industry that they, mm-hmm, want to play in.
Like their domain expertise.
Exactly.
Okay.
Their domain is not only Team8's domain expertise,
right,
it's the founders' domain expertise is even more important, right? So focus on where you already bring advantages, where you have real experience, and to start with, focus on these things. We're looking to back people that bring that that are insiders to the industries that they're after. I think the other advice is really be at the beginning validation obsessed. Okay. It's not about the technology, it's about the problem that you're building, the problem that you're solving for first, to make sure that when you touch that executive in the enterprise in that specific area, he screams of pain, and that he really has budget to pay for it, and it's painful and it's important for him. Be very much obsessed about that part. And then validate extremely the approach that you're after to really have, again, critical mass of validation. And I think in that regards, the teammate model is very helpful.
Okay.
So other than having...
You guys kind of like fit into that idea almost, 100%.
For sure. So one, we have teammate capital, which is I'd say a straightforward venture capital fund that invests in companies at seed and A rounds.
Okay.
That is very unique because it's backed by the teammate group with everything I said earlier. But we also have the foundry model at Teammate.
Okay.
And the foundry is where we partner with founders early on, before the idea stage.
Okay.
Sometimes based on maybe a thesis that Teammate had, that there's an opportunity to build a big company in that specific space. And then we go and hunt for an amazing founding team to partner with us on ideating and building a company in this space.
Okay.
Sometimes it's Teammate partnering with a phenomenal founder or founding team, where neither teammate nor the founder has an idea, or at that stage, maybe not even a clear focus on the problem we want to solve.
Okay.
And then we embark on the journey to do discovery and then narrow it down to a problem that we believe is important enough and we should build a company around it if we succeed in solving it. And then
within the domain expertise, though.
Do want the relevant teams.
You're not just like taking a guy who's in cybersecurity to be like, let's do sports tech, like, you know.
both the expertise of teammate and the expertise of the founding team, right?
Okay.
Together, we need to be relevant.
Sure.
And then after focusing on a problem, really do the ideation, and there's a lot of methodologies but no rules on how to come up with an approach, a differentiated approach with technical moat or whatever other advantage that really resonates with the market. So how do you, we're doing that process together.
Sure.
And then when we have an approach that resonates, how do we then do an extreme validation to get into the end of this process where we believe there's a big problem, there's a novel approach, and we know for a fact that this resonates with the market, and being really validation obsessed. And a teammate company typically meets between 100 to 200 prospect customers for that specific problem we're trying to solve.
Okay.
When as part of this foundry process of building a company, which is
but it's kind of like you have these three main areas is what you're kind of looking on when you're kind of when you're building the company, and thus it like fits also into the kind of the larger founder model. So you're kind of guiding them as you guys are building them.
Yeah.
That's very
the nice. Founders are leading the pack here, but they have this suite of teams and expertise, not only in the domain generally,
sure,
but in how to do analyst relations at that phase of a company, and how to do the validation, and in all those things. They have just people working for them with a lot of methodologies, that people that are company builders that have done it again and again and again. And again, help them accelerate this process hands-on by helping them, but also help them build their own engines and practices within the company independently.
Interesting.
And we've been doing that for the last 8 or 9 years successfully, very much. We've built companies through the foundry that were acquired by the likes of Cisco, PayPal, Temasek, and the likes. And we've also built companies that are growing and hopefully will go IPO someday. One good example is Clarity, a company that publicly said that they're around $100 million in ARR. This was a company built through that model with this whole...
Through
the Teammate Foundry model with an amazing group of founders discovering the problem, ideating around the solution, validating it with the market, and then spinning out the company and merging. And now it's gone like over $100 million in revenue, which is incredible.
So it works. So basically what you're telling me is Teammate Foundry model works. And if I'm a founder, I should at least early stage founder, I should definitely be coming to you guys and at least trying it out.
I think at this stage, we can say it works also from a purely venture capital terms. Like the first fund is very successful in terms of returns. So, and that's at the end of the day, the VC fund, this is how you measure it. So the foundry works extremely well. And I think also founders of Teammate that have worked with us, whether on the foundry or on the Teammate Capital VC side, will testify for how helpful we are, and will recommend other founders to want to work with us. And what we've done based on that success of the foundry is double down into two dimensions. One is to really build more foundries. So now we're doing foundry work in cyber and in enterprise technologies with this focus on data infrastructure. We have a whole foundry team focused just on fintech with four partners in the space. Mm-hmm. Rakefet, who was the CEO of a bank, mm-hmm. two unicorn founders, etc. A whole incredible team. And we just recently launched a third foundry that focuses on digital health here too. Four partners from that space that bring a lot of domain expertise and knowledge, but kind of like replicating the foundry model. And the other dimension where we expanded is really launching Teammate Capital, our VC fund, that more regularly just looks at deal flow and invest in companies. All of this is backed by this platform team that helps the companies in go-to-market, in HR, finance and operations, and many other aspects of company building.
That's awesome. Well, listen, it's been very fascinating understanding the whole Teammate model and understanding how you guys also are seeing the current, you know, time in the market. Seems like you guys are doing the right thing. If a lot of people are doing this, we're having $100 million in ARR and all that stuff. So I really wish you guys continued success. And let's see if we can get more of your companies on the show and see how we can also, showcase some of them. But thank you so much, Liran, for your time. I really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.